Presenting the people that are here, Mark Cullen from Palace Project, the founder, who spoke previously today. Thank you for your talk. It was great to hear. Birta, a curator and founder of Dwarf Gallery, which was a home gallery, operated for quite a few years, but shut its doors in 2013, maybe. Þorgerður Ólafsdóttir, artist, former director of the Living Art Museum. Sindri Leifsson, artist and founder of Listasafn Íslands.is, a home gallery. Listasafn Íslands means the National Gallery. So Sindri bought the URL of the the domain, like the domain of the National of the Gallery. National Gallery. Yes. Yeah. Mm. So he runs a home gallery. And Una, founder of Forstukona, director of the Fish Factory. Facilitator, yeah. And my name is Ed. And artist, yes, of course. It sounds like Filieu's name has come up quite a few times this today, so it just reminded me of a story that I was told once by Gottur. I wonder if it was in one of the mob shops or something where he was a young art student and he was really happy to be involved in this thing. And so he was a young art student at the time, and he told me that at some point he woke up in the middle of the night quite grumpy and sort of needed to go into the kitchen and get a glass of water. So he went into the kitchen and there sat Robert Filieu. And he was like, oh my God. And Filieu asked him, so where do you aim? And got the sort of, well, life, I guess. Aim carefully, is what he said to him. And I've always kind of like kept, you know, sort of carried this story with me a bit, and this sort of idea of the bow and arrow and where we are actually aiming, because I think often it feels as if we aren't really aiming anywhere, we're just going on. And so I question myself sometimes, what are we actually doing? Where are we aiming? Mark, do you have some thoughts in sort of within the context of what we are discussing today?
I can only really speak from my own experience, really, I think, on this one. Yeah, it's a hard one, you know, but I think I always wanted to have the being be around the energy of the creation of art and the society of that, and working collaboratively with other artists, and the idea of a place where you can present and show work. That's always something that I was really interested in from early days in college, like from putting on exhibitions or live art shows whilst I was in college. And when I was doing it at the time in college, I didn't think necessarily that it was a goal that could be attained per se. But then the more I did it, I was kind of going, well, this is what I actually always wanted to do. And we've always been trying since then to try and kind of cement that place whereby it can survive and last, you know, like beyond me, you know, when I give it up. So I hope that it'll continue. But the forces that kind of push against that are, you know, the market forces and the forces of, you know, development in the city and funding and whatnot, you know. But, you know, as we progress, I think our foothold is getting stronger, and I guess the reputational stake becomes a card that you can play in terms of how you can lobby for your position within the city, within the civil place that you live. So for me, I think the aim was, yeah, I always had the aim to kind of have a place that would be a platform for other artists to be there, to show work, to meet other artists, and for that platform to be not just about visual art, for it to be broader than that. And you know, I think there's an evolutionary aspect to what we do, you know, as you know, operating as cultural agents, you know, that it operates as something that steps outside of the drives of kind of you know, end game capitalism that's kind of taking over everywhere, you know, neoliberalism and that, and the artists and the artist communities kind of function on a different sort of parameter. Like, they function within a framework that is less about economy. I mean, obviously you need a certain amount of economy for it to sustain itself, but it's operating way outside the kind of drives of those drives that I mentioned. And the notion of time and how you spend your time, I think, is really important. You know, and artists have that's what we're rich in. We have so much time. You know, we're rich in time. Mm-hmm. You know, like people in other fields are working 60 hours a week, you know, or longer, you know, or, you know, working 40 hours and then doing 6-hour commutes. We were just hearing about that yesterday, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that? That's just nonsense, rubbish. But yeah, that's people's lives. I mean, you have to do it. You do it.
I mean, I think I have to, agree with that. There is a lot of nonsense, but maybe we have to rewind a little bit in many ways. But Una, you talked about sort of cultivating creativity as one alternative to exploiting the nature, or like alternative to the aluminium smelters and the big industries. If you sort of direct this to you, the sort of this idea of where we are aiming, and I mean this was one reason that you mentioned, kind of in response to like, why is this important at all? I mean, why are we doing this? Can you? Yeah, where do you see us aiming, or where should we aim?
You mean what I'm thinking personally?
Yeah, sort of within what you were working on.
I think the aim in the end of the day is to have a good life and enjoy what you're doing, and if what you enjoy has a positive effect on your society, then I think you can go happy under the turf. So I think it is pretty simple in essence, because then it's like, why do you do this? And then why would you facilitate the artists? And why would you, you know, underneath all of that is basically that you wouldn't do it unless there is some sort of enjoyment in it, because why else would you lay so much labor on yourself without there being this essence of joy in it, or some sort of life positivity. But then, like, we can also, like, because it's basically what we are doing is that we are trying to show an alternative way, which we think is a sustainable way, to keep rural settlement around the country. But then, this morning, I was asking myself, why the hell would we even keep up that fight? Towns like, you know, civilizations have risen and fallen. You know, when you think about it in the big picture, then you're kind of like, what does it matter? And to that, I don't really have any, like, good argument, other than I just would love it to be a possibility for, like, that we can also choose to live closer to nature and have some sort of quality in the life of living there, which involves like these three things that we were talking about, like creative jobs, to enjoy culture and multicultural society, and to have some sort of progressive education, because that's where we want to, you know, and not to be in the stress, and you can go and meet the Atlantic every day, you know, and that's quality. That's actually quality, and you know, so that's the aim.
Nice. Mark, you talked about a lot of things in your talk that are really familiar to us, like the spaces and funding and but I want to sort of direct the talk towards the age of the internet. And, you know, talking about these 40 years since the foundation of Nilo, and, you know, how much everything has really changed. And there is, like, increased mobility, new possibilities in communication, and the whole landscape is just completely different. So we really don't need the same now as we did then. Hildigunnur mentioned some sort of an inbreed, you know, a lack of interest in, I don't know what, maybe something we could define as the unknown, which was something that we were seeking earlier. Hildigunnur.
It's easier to go to Kate today.
Yeah.
People weren't crossing the Atlantic as accelerated rate as they do now. So,
but now
they see stuff, but they're not very interested when it comes to our hometown.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There is like this overload and abundance of stuff, and maybe we're just like exploding because there is so much happening. What do you guys think? Are the circles getting smaller? Are we, with all this increased mobility and communication and everything, is it maybe, Birta, if I direct this to you, because you work both here and abroad, and you know, with, you've worked in an institution and with individual artists and with your home gallery, and like have many different perspectives on this. You know, what do you think with this? With this like period and time that we have, where so much is possible, but maybe we are just closing ourselves in somehow. Do you see where I'm heading?
Not really, but I will try to. I mean, you give me like a really good grain to think about. I unfortunately missed Hildigunnur's talk, so maybe missing out on some reference points, but I'm just thinking, first of all, I think we, meaning, you know, the local art community, most of us, if not all, must be like super thrilled that there are indeed so many, incredibly many various things happening. And, you know, and I think, you know, ultimately they go hand in hand with, you know, the with an increasingly growing art community all over the world, actually. You know, art schools are exploding, museums are opening every day. You know, it's just becoming a bigger field.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, I wouldn't maybe, you know, have the analyzing tools really, you know, but certainly also since you mentioned, you know, the post-internet era or whatever, I mean, this is certainly helping out in, you know, communicating our ideas as well, and the idea that you can, first of all, actually do this in your life, you know, and secondly, that you might be able to, you know, make art, open an art space, publish an art book, etc.
Mm-hmm.
On your own terms, you know, without all the predefinitions and stuff. So ultimately, you know, it's like a very, very sort of general thing. I think, I mean, it's super fantastic, you know. And but what it tells us about the artist initiative, I think it's just like all these factors, you know, coming together that sort of create that multifaceted. Facility, which is probably not a word, but let's invent it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as a very general response, I guess. Yeah.
I guess the question was not really a question. It was sort of like a brain picking undefined something. Talaskirar, yeah. And please, you know, if you have questions, ask along the way. Yeah, please do.
Just that small element that you were talking about with the internet and how that is changing as well. I mean, in this, you know, a few years back, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, post-internet was like, you know, the thing to aim at somehow, but like it was a very short period because it's almost like forgotten now, but we dissected a little bit still what it was and everything. And listasatnislands.is kind of came in that era as well. I mean, because it was like an extremely small space where people could exhibit, but this website was it was combined with the website, so parts of the work were actually only available online, so not in the physical space. So I did, and I do try to make that available, some parts of the exhibition at least, available through the website. Mm-hmm. and artists have used that in different ways as well.
This isn't meant to be easy, you know.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the, you know, why collect? Why the purpose behind it all? If you're, yeah, in a very sort of, I don't know really where I went in my head just for the past 10 minutes, but I was just hovering over, yeah, this entire seminar. But if I can sort of twist this question and sort of project it into the future, that's one thing that comes up quite often, and it would be great to have some dialogue about, is sort of what is the future of artist-run spaces? Do we get the feeling that there are more new spaces opening up? Is this something that will continue? And also, what kind of conditions do we need to have this mode of like an organization or like a community that it like continues? Because I don't know if I am sort of getting, you know, these ideas just in my head, but I feel like there hasn't been many new spaces opening up in the past years. Like the ones that have opened are really like current, they're very visible. But because maybe we've been focusing on this timeline, is that it seems that there has been a bit of decline. And I also wanted to maybe like ask, you know, isn't this something that we as an art scene want to continue with? And then how do we plan to continue with this? And are we always going to rely on the next generation coming maybe from the art school, or then, you know, just have this idea in their head that they want to create a space? Because the longevity of the space, and it can be in, like, it doesn't have to be like a gallery, a studio, or home. It can be a heart-shaped box, a keychain. It can be whatever, like, we have known. It can be the eyes of someone, necklace, whatever.
Can I?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I forgot the point behind this all. I had this end-sending.
The thing is, I think, like, we don't have to worry about that there will not be artist initiatives, because it's in the nature of new generations to overthrow what's already established. So it's just, like, it's natural that there comes something new from, like, new generations. But I think the reason why we don't have crazy many spaces opening now is just because of the circumstances on the real estate market.
On the real estate market.
Yeah, it's just like with mm-hmm. empty houses, opportunities. Mm-hmm. Lack of houses, less shit. It's just somehow, it's just like next economical crash, we'll all go open up lots of stuff, you know, then we go up again, everything closes.
But is this true that there is, you know, less spaces opening up? I'm not sure I agree with that.
Statistically, yes. Like, and, yeah, since 2014, 15, when did Gallery Port open? Mm-hmm. That's one. 16
around that time.
Open 2018, and then there are art projects, of course. But they are depending on.
Skotus opened in 2017 and have an opening today.
Yeah.
I wonder about.
Can I just.
Sure, you have
tiny
to turn on
tiny question, just because you were mentioning the internet and you know and a decline in new spaces or new, as you mentioned, it's not spaces, new initiatives that may be a pocket or a box gallery or whatever. I mean, so I remember when I was in the academy, you know, the internet was coming, and you know.
That's so sweet.
You know, so the I remember going with Ingolfur, we went with you to some space. Don't remember who it was here downtown. Someone had internet, or you know, like we were looking at some web stuff, and it was like, wow, like something new. And of course, I mean, it's just natural. It must be that, you know, now that there is internet, you know, and there are all sorts of things, you know, like, I mean, and there is social media. Of course, that takes time from, and necessity from otherwise us back in that time, pre-internet, to create some pocket gallery or a. You know, there was kind of, you know, when there wasn't Facebook, then we, you know, we made a gallery group or whatever, and you met in actual space. So maybe I'm just thinking this has maybe, of course, must affect in some way the creation of physical spaces or initiatives or actions, and much of them happen, you know, in the virtual somehow.
I'm thinking a little bit, I mean, I find among the questions asked today, I find the one about the future, you know, very interesting. Also because to me, you know, it a little bit entails like, you know, the question of, you know, directing it, or who's gonna direct it? Does someone want to direct it or whatever? I'm thinking, you know, this sentence, you know, I don't know about you, but it has popped out of my mouth to some, you know, foreign guests or whatever, you know. Like being very proud, like of the artist initiatives in Iceland, and to which degree it has been a platform for sustaining this little but very intensive scene, and you know, say, you know, talking about it as a kind of a health sign of the scene, you know, and thinking indeed of the, you know, different statistics, or you know, sometimes it's been very low. There have been one or two. Active, sometimes there have been, you know, 7 active in Reykjavik, and not to mention the rest of the country. And but I think with the future, I mean, coming back to this project of, you know, pulling the information together, and indeed, you know, showing graphically the statistics, and, you know, establishing this as a history, I think, or it's my feeling that it will also, you know, if you assume that it's an incredibly positive part of an art scene, and indeed a health sign, you know, for it to have many artist-run spaces, then I think it will definitely become a kind of a motivation, you know, for future to come, you know, like for people to identify with it as a history, you know what I mean? I'm a little bit occupied with that in thinking about this project.
And as a tradition as well.
Yeah.
Ásta, you had...
Já, fyrir gengum við tala mikið. Ég tek allavega það sem ég var allavega einmitt að fara að segja, það sem hann Ólafur var að segja. Sko sjáðu til, eða ég að hugsa þetta og búin að vera að hugsa það, að flest listaverk, sem ég horfi á, eða við sem erum á hóminum myndlist, sjáum við á ljósmynd. Þegar listasafni var stofnað, þá var hvorki internet, þið vitið, það var ekkert net, þannig að maður kom á sýningu alveg rosalega spenntur að sjá hvað manneskja væri að sýna. Í sjálfum sér þá myndi ég segja að listin hefur ekki breyst svo ótrúlega mikið á þessum 50 árum eða hvað þetta en það hefur breyst, tæknin hefur breyst þannig að maður eiginlega búinn að sjá á Facebook sýninguna áður en hún opnar því að listamaðurinn spreðar myndum, ég að setja upp sýninguna mína, svo kemur fólk á opnun og það tekur myndir af öllu saman Og síðan þetta bara spurning þetta skrýtna samband manneskjunnar við raunveruleikan. Þetta alveg eins og ég sé fullt af myndum af segjum Eiffelturninum en þú vilt samt fara að sjá hann. Og þannig að mér finnst þetta vera sko sérkennilegt ástand. Ljósmyndir af verkum eru bókstaflega svo aðgengilegar að það spurning en samt förum á safnið sko eða fyrir, mér finnst þetta það eiginlega breytt ástand.
Og ég held að þetta hafi meiri áhrif sko jafnvel núna á það hvernig I think that what you're talking about has always had an effect on the creation of artworks because to some extent you have to mediate them through something else than just exhibiting them in a physical space. But through Instagram and Facebook and this Instagrammable art, sometimes that becomes a tool or even a starting point for creating something that you can mediate it because you know that only 50 people are going to see it anyway, but maybe 110,000 online. So the way to mediate it through this, you know, square of the Instagram photo becomes like a director in how you make your sculpture, how you work with your information.
Þetta þarf að myndast vel sko.
So you mean that the technology is like more and more shaping the art so that because Ásta mentioned that maybe the art hasn't changed so much in these past maybe 50 years but the technology has changed so much. So if we then look onwards to the next 40 or 50 years or something, what?
3D
Yeah, indeed. 5G and.
Well, I mean,
I've just been thinking, like, it's funny because we're talking about the future and all this. And have you heard this argument, like, the likelihood that we're actually living in a simulation is overwhelmingly more likely than we're not, right? Mm-hmm. So it's quite likely statistically that we are in a simulated reality. And then you start to look at like computer games and stuff like this, like 3D simulated stuff, and it's getting over like a really short time span. It's like drastically getting more and more realistic. And you're kind of like, okay, 15 minutes later, we are just going to be like in 3D simulated reality. And then, I don't know, 100 years later, we are uploaded and we don't bother about it. We just go back into the body to take it for piss and shit and all this. Why not? Mm-hmm. You know, because the technological advances are so fast. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of thinking like, well, maybe the future of artist-driven spaces is just totally secured because you have like virtual reality and you know, there's no like, oh shit, it's leaking, I need to get this, you know, you just program it. It's perfect.
So
it definitely, you know. Definitely solves the real estate problem.
It solves the real estate problem. Yeah, and it opens up crazy possibilities because like why do you need to be showing a sculpture? Mm-hmm. You can just be showing like a virtual reality trip.
Mm-hmm. I liked very much, just to like add to it, I like very much, you know, what Unnar mentioned earlier about even though, you know, maybe for the lack of terms or, you know, for the time being we're using space, like rými, list rými. But I liked how, you know, he talked about, you know, that we are not necessarily talking about space, I mean, or virtual space, but the initiative is, for me, very much key, you know. That's why you would like to sort of keep something here. That's the keeper, basically, to me, you know, mm-hmm. in any form, in any medium, in any way, whatever. Yeah, but the initiative, þú veist, frumkvæði, bara just to do, you know, just to be, just to maybe like contribute to, for, you know, a little bit mushy-mushy, but to contribute to the kind of hole or, you know, the kind of hidden bubble, I guess, you choose to be a part of, which is in the art world and hopefully the whole world, you know. I mean, in that sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In and my mind, the both the dialogue and the material will always be quite important. How do you see this, Mark?
Well, I think in 50 years, we could likely have, we should at that stage have a situation where we have universal wage, you know, so the idea of standard work will be kind of completely different, and I think there'll be a lot more artists as a consequence, because people will have lots of time to be creative with, so we can kind of show the way in that regard, you know, how to creatively use our time in lots of interesting ways, you know, so I think the future could be very bright for artists and artist-led activities, or, you know, the world could get even more bleaker, but, sorry?
Yeah, life in general.
Well, of course, yeah, I mean, like, Jesus Christ, yeah. But a universal wage could go a long way towards, you know, solving these issues as well, you know, because it's all about redistribution of, like, wealth and all that goes with that, you know, because it's all been sucked out of the system and being spent in extractionist means rather than on kind of more collective community sort of aspects of how we could live. And like we know we're living in an age of abundance, you know, we've got like massively abundant, right? Who was pointing out earlier in the talk that not so long ago we were getting, what, tinned vegetables in Iceland, all the vegetables are tinned, and in Ireland avocados arrived in like in the 90s, you know, and like before that we had no red peppers or any, so we just had like turnips and potatoes and, you know, now we have anything you could possibly want, you know, so we're living in this age of abundance, but obviously the system is overheating and that has to be redressed. But then we've got the robots coming and artificial intelligence, and there's going to be less and less jobs. I believe the factory out here is pretty much robot. It's become automatic. It's automatic for the fishes. So that's spreading. There's going to be less jobs, less kind of jobs available for everybody in society, you know, so there has to be a rethink as to how, you know, the system works, because, you know, if you don't have a job, you can't afford to buy the goods that is being created by capitalism, then the people at the top aren't kind of getting their use out of us, you know, which is kind of, so I would be optimistic that we will get the universal wage. There are people that are talking about it.
I'm pessimistic. No.
I love this optimism. Well, I mean, I think I'm definitely on your line, Mark. Maybe I should just not mention the thick slice of ham that I was gonna mention. No, I was wondering about like zooming out and into some abstraction. No, I'm wondering about like, because the system, like with capital S, it seems to be sort of biting its tail. And I mean this, and the famous 1% is gradually becoming a 0.1%. Yeah, indeed. And you know, then the uprise of the right wing powers and all the extreme groups and increased censorship and you know, with recent examples from Brazil, with artists getting life threats and escaping the country, and I mean, all of this crazy business. I mean, and now we have, I mean, Ireland and Iceland, these cute little islands, and you know, what's the role of artist-run initiatives in this crazy world of these dystopian and utopian?
Can I actually say something? It's very funny because we run a residency, so we have every month people from all over the world, and we recently painted our kitchen like bright yellow because we were so tired of the apocalyptic conversation that was constantly being brought into, like, so it seems to be, as you know, now I'm living like behind the mountain of the world, you know, I'm living in Stöðafjörður, the spirit of the time doesn't even get there. Það er ekki tíðarandi næring, sko. It's really weird. But then we have all these people coming, and like, I would say like a broad majority of people are very worried about the future of the world. So we are always joking, we're saying, okay, when shit hits the fan, we will be changing the creative center into a refugee center, right? Because that's where we're heading. And the reason why, I'm actually a very optimistic person, but I think like, for example, the future we're heading to, in order to do anything about it, we need like global political, like, decision to reinvent the global economy, and I just don't see it happening. not in not that people are elected to 4 years at a time, not how populism is on the rise. Like I just forget about it. Like, and nobody either has any idea. I haven't heard or seen anybody come forward with an alternative way to run a global economy. Like, which is basically what we need. So, like, we made it roll, like, it all hangs together.
Well, we could start, like, we could stop subsidizing extractionist industry for a start, you know?
Like, there's
could
many
be a big
things
help.
That can be done.
We could,
like,
stop investing in extractionist companies. That could help too. Like, all the universities in the US and, like, in Europe invest in Mobil and Shell, and, you know, they've got their portfolios in companies that are actively trying to destroy the world, you know?
Yeah,
so
but
we could
there's
stop
not
doing that.
A political will for it. It's so blatantly
no, it's,
obvious.
It's social, like, movement groups are social justice groups, social movement groups like Avaaz, Greenpeace, they're making headway.
But then people,
you know,
vote Donald Trump or like the president of Brazil or like
yeah.
True Finns or Marie Le Pen or Gerhard
Schlichter,
you know.
Le Pen make it.
No, but still, she's out there saying
Trump
stuff.
Trump hopefully
you know.
Get impeached.
Yeah.
He's lost the house.
Yeah, but still, just like there's so much like push into the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think in general civilization is becoming more civilized. It's just we're running out of time. So it would appear that we're running out of time environmentally. You know, that's the great catastrophe that could completely wipe out all of the gains of civilization, you know. Like education is much more widespread. Everybody's got access to the internet practically across the whole globe. So in having that, they've got access to education, and education is such the great like leveler, you know, in terms of leveling opportunities. So I think that's fantastic. It's amazing. But and with education, there's kind of the interconnectivity of like, you know, people realizing like, hang on a minute, this is totally wrong, and like more people are connecting with that idea and kind of pressurizing organizations such as like some Monsanto, you know, to break down their practices. Like for instance, the glyphosate, that they're not getting their license to renew glyphosate use in Europe, and they're fighting really, really hard to get it renewed, but it's been suspended, you know? And that's their model. And they're like one of the biggest companies in the world, and they're like, you know, nasty, really, really nasty. But it's due to organizations kind of fighting back on ground, grassroots level, you know? So that to my mind, is the only way. And like those grassroots models are very similar to the idea of like artist-led, you know, because they're leading from the bottom, like, you know?
Yeah,
and
don't get me wrong. I think like what we are doing is basically resistance,
yes,
towards
resistance,
this. But
yeah.
Like even though that, I'm just kind of like...
The enemy is mighty, but, you know,
yeah,
we must resist.
We'll meet after the apocalypse and discuss this.
There's a question in please.
I was in Paris when Donald Trump was elected. I was in a photo art fair, and there was a gallery owner from America who literally fell on the floor when she found out the fate of the world. To me, it wasn't so bad because through history, I think most of the beautiful art that has come around is when we have problems. So maybe apocalypse would be the best thing for art today. but yeah.
Are you a nihilist?
but also that if we are the most creative people of the human race, we are also a bit responsible for the future, and we are the minds that can create amazing things in our head and make it happen. So all this talk about the future and where does art belong there and how will it be is our responsibility. And if we cannot do it, our future will happen in the heads of politicians. And we, you know, that's a completely less creative head, I think. So maybe we should have to realize our responsibility there. Thank you.
This owner of this house is probably one of the most powerful person in Iceland. And he do everything for money. And the company owned Brim and had bought Grandi. We are in this house now talking about art. I have no fear of art. I have more fear of people not allowing themselves to do what they want and think there always going to be possibilities if you just stay open for it. And that's why I'm not, because art is not about money, and that's why I'm very was very optimistic about this place here, to the grassroots coming here and feel the power of the money, and that's why it's a very good situation. I think I'm very optimistic about the future. We're always going to find a way, because that's the nature of human being.
I think just to continue a bit arounding, because you mentioned this particular house. It was very interesting when the dialogue about the Marshall House first started, and when Nilo and Klingenbang were in this dialogue with the city of Reykjavik, how much we were underlining the fact that both Nilo and Klingenbang, they had sort of disappeared from the city center. And we sort of asked, the city and the mayor, like, what kind of city do you want to be? Do you want to be a city that just simply can't allow or won't allow independent venues to open up? And what does it mean when all these places are disappearing? And the city sort of took that to heart. And because we went really far into this money dialogue a bit earlier, is that there has been some sort of a realization point within the city of Reykjavik. Just, by my experience with 4-year period or so, and that gives you sort of hope that that is going to form into, the way of thinking and tradition. But, the big battle with the state, that has not yet, been won. And that dialogue probably will always have its up and down, and it's been sort of spiraling down for a while, not only for Nilo, but for many other places. But I sort of wanted to get back into this dialogue about the current times and sort of the future. Mm-hmm. The feeling that I've gotten about the art scene in Iceland in particular is that it's like, many of us consider this as a commune. It's like a mutual responsibility. It's like cultural responsibility to participate and create things. And I am not going anywhere with this point. I just wanted to to sort of head in this direction. Please.
Connected to that, and this ongoing initiative of artists, because I'm super positive about that. And you talk about it as a responsibility, but maybe I'm the one now on this panel that last graduated from the school, even though it was a long time ago. But I don't think we ever saw it as a responsibility. We just saw it as a natural thing that you did as a part of being an artist in this scene, and I think that is still super strong. And when you look, for example, at the student-run gallery that's now in the old or the former house where the Nilo exhibition space was, called Rimd, all the students are extremely ambitious, and they are an institution almost that has an international open call for this space. That's a student gallery. So, I mean, it is very natural still to the, and it has a lot to do with the education as well. That is just comes so natural to everyone. And you know, there are, you know, tens and tens of student run galleries, you know, called something like, you know, Vasselda Galleríið, you know, Gallery Skítur og Kanill, you know, etc. Like, so I think a little bit later on in the career or the process of people, then artists start to think about it as a responsibility, but not just as a natural sort of byproduct of working here locally.
But what I mean also with the commune is that you are part of this like net. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you're maybe not aware of this responsibility, but as soon as you do something, then like you are being responsible a bit. Mm-hmm. You're taking part in this. Mm-hmm. And I also I think that Steinun is gone, but she talked about when she founded Harbingar, mm-hmm. it was a way to get to know the scene, and because they felt like they were outsiders, they'd been living abroad for a really long time, so this was a step for them to get into the scene and, you know, take part in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also one of the great things about the scene here is that there's room for spaces to be open. Like, there's always this possibility of doing something. You just have to, you know, like I said, it doesn't have to be an actual space with square meters. It mm-hmm. can be very abstract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think maybe it also touches a bit on your question about aims, you know? Like, I think, you know, it's an aim also to do that. Mm-hmm. And I can identify with that when opening a space, you know, that it, you know, the idea, the aim really was to, you know, establish ground, not long-term, indeed, you know, no predetermined aim, but just to establish ground, you know, to just communicate, you know, just to learn from one another. And, you know, really this, I think, in the times we are living, you know, I mean, becomes more precious because it is not determined by the powers that we might choose to fight, for instance. It is actually the opposite of that. And that itself, I find to be an opposition, you know, a kind of a force of doing your own thing outside of a predetermined sort of outcome also, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. Yeah, and so, I mean, the dialogue is always just so important, and like between the different circles. And I wonder about the role of the Art Academy or the Art University and the Artist Initiatives, and you know, the dialogue between these two, because the art, I mean, there is only one art university here, like on university level, so that is like the nesting, or like the hatching station for artists. And I mean, that's where they are taught like a certain culture, or like taken into a certain culture, you know. And my feeling is really that one of the strongest sides of the art scene in Iceland is sort of this collective spirit, that everybody sort of helps each other out. If you need a projector or something, you can always call somebody and people will help you out. And I think that this is something that is kind of taught at the Art Academy, that you help each other out. So maybe I wonder sort of how the Art Academy influences the scene and vice versa. Do you know what I mean?
I think this talks a little bit about what I was saying earlier about the environment there, that yeah. you are very, really encouraged to help one another and do, you know, these artist-run spaces and initiatives. But I want to touch down on a point of also the amount of students that get educated here in the Art University is really high. when it comes to, because people were talking about, and Steinar was talking about the art scene in Bergen, for example, where they graduate maybe 12 students from the fine arts department. You know, Stockholm, Mayen has like 14 students, and Kunstfack, another 14, you know, for a big city like Stockholm. But in Iceland, we're graduating 25 people each year, so you have a lot of manpower to come in, and, you know. And just the BA, and of course, like another 5, 6 to 10 in the MA program now. So for a small city like Reykjavik, this is a huge amount of people every year that's coming out, and like that contributes a lot to how things are being run. I think, you know, because I mean, some people call it a cultural worker, you know, but you know, I think that is relevant to think about.
Is there much fall off after college and that people
I think
begin not to practice?
Do you mean that people that become like practicing artists and
Gottur had this thunder speech. He used to have this thunder speech for first years every year where he like listed up all of the statistics.
I hate that speech.
So in
what did he do? He listed off
he said
what?
In 5 years maybe 5 of you will still be working as artists, as 10 years, 3 of you might still be working, etc. And then in 20
years...
And
they will all be male.
Well, I think that was a part of the speech.
Yeah. Right. I actually have to agree with you, Edda. I don't like that at all, because what I'm talking about is that, you know, you finish an art education, and who gives a shit if you're going to practice as a professional artist? You go into the society with a newfound creative thinking, and you go into different sectors. So, like, being an artist, I think that's like almost an outdated, you know,
and it sort of
a stamp that you put on yourself, you know.
And it shifts into different layers, which is quite
but
powerful.
Because you were thinking about the relationship between the art university and the art scene.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just if we go back 40 years ago, then when the Living Art Museum was being founded, it was founded by the people who were working at the university at the time. And the students, they participated in the founding of the museum, and that has sort of been this conveyor belt into at least this place and the university. And there's been a connection like ever since. Like next year, the MA in Fine Arts, they will have their degree show in the Living Arts Museum, which I think everyone is very happy about. And of course, there should be a very active dialogue between the university and Nilo, for example, and other artist-owned spaces about sort of, you know, what is the job environment about a bit?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all sorts, it's all kinds.
In Dublin, the National College of Art and Design has reduced the degree from 4 years down to 3, which seemed really like crazy idea, but to kind of offset that now, that they're inserting a third year in between second and third year, right? So it's kind of, but it's outside the college, and it's called a kind of a studio practice year, where they go around now. It's the first time they're doing it, so they're going around visiting studios and galleries, and you know, it's kind of like looking at professional practice. Because I mean, when I was in college, and I know even up until recently, it's just something that was never really considered as part of the curriculum, like, you know, what you might do to be, you know, a practitioner outside of your degree or your MA or whatever, like, it just wasn't considered. So I guess they're reducing the size of the MA, but trying to hook up now more with actual institutions and organizations, artist-led and whatnot, to kind of give the students you know, an eye-opener as to how things operate after after college, which I think is good. You know, reducing the MA, reducing the size of the degree isn't necessarily good, and maybe it would be better to somehow incorporate the two and keep the length, but that's a different argument, you know. But in Dublin also, we do a show over 3 weeks. It's kind of three shows with 30 to 40 students from Dunleary College of Art and Design, which is kind of another college down in the South Dublin. They come in and they do kind of, it's the year before they do their degree showing. So they come in and it's kind of, it's all about professional practice, where it's a critical, it's a critically led and engaged show that they do. It's kind of like a group show with where Gavin Murphy, the co-director, he comes in and he helps them think about their exhibition strategies, you know, mm-hmm. how things look together, how mm-hmm. you hang, all that sort of thing. Things that mm-hmm. wouldn't necessarily be part of your thinking because you're so concerned with how to make the whatever it is you're doing, you know. So that's one way we interact. And NCAD, which is we're a neighbor of NCAD, they're doing that new program. Yeah, so there is a kind of intermeshing. And you mentioned the college putting forward the idea that there should be a sharing, an economy of sharing. That exists in Dublin as well, you know, where we can call up any of the organizations which might have a projector, and likewise we have a sound system. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sharing. So it's great. I mean, it is. That's what is really kind of life-affirming about the system, like the art scene. Yeah. You know, the people are looking out for each other, and they're happy to see new things rather than thinking, oh, they're going to take away from our piece of the action, you know? Yeah. Which is, you know, that's just not good thinking, I think.
Yeah.
The more the better.
Við þurfum að fara að klára bráðum, en mér langar til að hvetja til kannski fleiri spurning og sal. More questions from the audience before we wrap it up. Allir orðnir þreyttir. So I think we have to finish very soon, so just if you can, in one or two minutes, just wrap things up, and then Hildigunnur Birgisdóttir will stand up and lead us to the end of this party. Just before you stand up, claim the microphone and tell everyone what we're doing. But I'm just going to mention that we are drowning in bread. Við erum að drukna í brauði. Svo hérna við inngöngin á skrifstofuna askja full af brauðhleifum. Þannig að grípi ykkur einn undir handlegin áður en lappi heim. But let's finish this discussion and then Hildigunnur will talk a little bit. Við brauðfæðum listamenn, það það sem við gerum.
Closing remarks. I think we've kind of traveled in and out and to very different directions. Do you have any like closing quick closing remarks to the future of artist initiatives in the world?
We can also just, we can keep it simple. We can say, is the future bright? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Do you agree on this?
Art is great. Keep doing it.
Okay.
I think that we need to be aware. Like, I think this also maybe one of the purpose of this publication is to create awareness as well. And like maybe I'm just being over worried that this awareness isn't already being aware of or something. But I think that definitely the artist-run art scene in Iceland should do this more often. We should meet more often. We should talk more often. We should, because the museums, they have all sorts of lectures and symposiums where they talk about many different things, and like maybe we could have a whole symposium for 3 days about the money, you know, the money situation, and like what money is good money, what money is bad money, how to fund, how can we fund ourselves, etc., because that is such a big topic. So I just wanted to throw this out here that like I look forward to the next seminar held by some artist on space next year. Mm-hmm. It would be like a very, very good, that mm-hmm. would also be very interesting, choosing a different topic or maybe more specific than this sort of general.
That's a great idea. Sounds fantastic. Sindri, any closing remarks?
So good work that you're doing with the book, and also sets a good reminder of like what happens to all your stuff. We're talking about the internet and like internet spaces, and like you're talking about bringing in boxes of stuff, and I've had like 4 different galleries or whatever, you know, like, what are you talking about? Boxes of stuff? I have no boxes of stuff anywhere. Like, most of this is just electronic, you know, and like.
Yeah, taking screenshot off your website.
Yeah, so like, what happens to the archive? what happens to the archive when, you know, you have a VR experience gallery, you know?
I was told to stand up and claim the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very good. I think we, yeah,
You can say something.
I just want to say that I'm very grateful for just the fact, I want to say the fact that everybody is born creative and it just needs to be kind of like nurtured a little bit. And if we have a very little moment before Hildigunnur speaks, I think that a video that will now play our excellent closing marks for this dialogue.
Can I say one thing just to before the video? Just because I kind of had like a, you know, pause, rewind when you mentioned in your talk self-sustainability in terms of running artist-run spaces, you know. Again, like I mentioned, I unfortunately missed out on a great part of the day, et cetera. But to me, I'm leaving with lots of questions and wonderful thoughts about, you know, art and creativity also. But I'm also leaving with, for my own, challenging myself in thinking of what is self-sustainability in terms of the history that we are talking about, local history, and global history of, you know, artist-run spaces, which in most cases has been a history of volunteering, you know, and being the only person who does not make a living in any way and keeps contributing, you know, and also receiving, obviously. But I think, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, the book, which, you know, it's super essential to collect this history, and what Unnar mentioned also before, that it's not right the writing of a history, but collecting of documentation. But I would love to see the first, or you know, some kind of processing from that book by whomever, you know, to question, you know, sustainability in a form also of a book or a project, you know, based on the information collected in this book, because I think this will shed a light on so many things incredibly, and, you know, like sharpen indeed the future we want to, you know, create, continuing, you know.
Ég velti fyrir mér
sko. Mér finnst alltaf svo erfið þessi tilhugsun að við erum alltaf að byggja eitthvað upp. En við erum alltaf að byggja upp á sem sagt, því að sem sagt, kóngurinn eða biskupinn sjái náð sína til þess að sem sagt, gefa peningin í það. Og við vitum það alveg að bara leið og það kemur eitthvað samdráttur í efnahagslífi, þá er þetta bara fyrsti hluturinn sem klyftur út. Og það einhvern veginn sko fáránlega trist af því að þú veist, allt sem búið að byggja upp er náttúrulega bara á bakinu á allir þessari brjálögu sjálfbófinu sem allir eru alltaf að gera. Og við erum búin að vera að hugsa þetta mjög mikið og sem sagt, það sem við erum bara leynt og ljóst, bara að reyna að stefna að. Og ég veit ekkert hvort okkur takist það, en þetta það sem við erum að reyna. Það það að sem sagt, við erum ekkert háð því hvort að sköpunarmiðstöðin lifi af næstu 50 árin, hvort að, þú veist, Jón eða Jóhanna eru til í að vera mem eða ekki, af því þau sita á bakvið stýrið. Og ég hef ekki ennþá náð að taka strákana hérna sem reka lungaskólan á spjall, en við höfum verið svona að þeir hafa til nýmis farið þá leið að vera ekki, sem sagt, þeir eru að reyna að gera þetta, sem sagt, ekki þannig að, þú veist, að þetta sé byggt upp á því að það alltaf ríki eða sveitafélag. Og ég bara veltið fyrir mig, kannski þurfum við bara eitthvað að fara að hugsa eitthvað bara svona allt öðruvísi um það hvernig við erum að reka þessi rými okkar og þessi, kannski þurfum við bara að fara að búi til okkar einn peninga, skilur við, til þess að lifa daginn af, skilur við.
Við verðum að klára því að í ókvæm, í okkur list, gjörningar,
og brauð snúðar.
Ef við erum mjög akúta tíma þá getum við
I guess you know I've been out here now for some days, groping my way along, trying to realize my vision here. Started concentrating so hard on my vision that I lost sight. Come to find out that it's not vision, it's not the vision at all. It's the groping. It's the groping, it's the yearning, it's the moving forward. I'm so fixated on that flying cow that when Ed told me Monty Python already painted that picture, thought I was through. I had to let go of that cow so I could see all the other possibilities. Anyway, I want to thank Maurice for helping me let go of that cow. Thank you, Maurice, for playing Apollo to my Dionysus in Art's Cartesian dialectic. And thanks to you, Ed, because the truth shall set us free. And Maggie, thank you for sharing the destruction of your house so that today we can have something to fling. I think Kierkegaard said it oh so well. The self is only that which is in the process of becoming. Art, same thing. James Joyce had something to say about it too. Welcome, O life. I go to encounter for the millionth time the reality of experience and a forge in the smithy of my soul, the uncreated conscious of my race. We're here today to fling something that bubbled up from the collective unconsciousness of our community. Ed, you about ready? Thing I learned, folks, this is absolutely key. It's not the thing to fling, it's the fling itself.
This is so cool.
Let's play something, Cicely. One, two, three.
Þetta var geggjað. Ég búin að skrifa mikið að nótum. Ég var ekki stuð til að tala í dag, þannig að ég skila þeim bara í kassan hérna listamanna Reginn Rými og mín komment á það. Ég ætlaði að bjóða ykkur að koma yfir í hérna eitt slíkt listamanna Reginn Rými sem heitir Open. Við erum fjögur sem að stöndum að því. Open aðalega vinnustofa og það mikið búið að tala hérna listamanna Reginn Rými og þörfina fyrir listamanna Reginn Rými og af hverju fólk opnar slík rými. Á okkar vinnustofu hreinlega kvöð frá borg að eigi að vera starfsemi húsinu fyrir almenning. Þannig að það ástæðan fyrir það að listamanna Reginn Rými í því rými. En einnig að sjálfsög út af því að við höfum áhuga á að sjá ýmsa hluti og mér langaði að bara svona að segja eitt varðandi mikilvægi eða sem sagt framtíðina og framtíðin mun að sjálfsögðu bara það mun alltaf vera listamanna Reginn Rými sé þörf á þeim og þau munu að sjálfsögðu alltaf spretta úr þeim jarðvegi sem þá þegar og vera komment á það og kannski ómögulegt að sjá fyrir hvernig það verður en enn annað þetta listamanna rekna rými rekið af fólki sem ekki að sinna grasrótinni sem slíkri og það sprettur eins og ég sagði út frá svolítið annarlegum ástæðum fram og að sjálfsögðu það sem við höfum svona verið að leggja áherslu á í þetta hálfa ár sem við höfum rekið þetta rými er að sjá það sem okkur langar að sjá og það sem við höfum ekki fengið að sjá annars staðar og það yfirleitt þess vegna sem að fólk finnur með sér þörf til þess að opna slík rými og það var kannski hérna, umræða sem að var ekki hægt að taka endilega í dag af því að það var svo margt annað sem lá undir hvað relevant í dag og okkur langar mikið að sjá ýmislegt sem að mitt að gerast erlendis svona samtímalistamenn okkar bara fólk sem að starfa kollegar í öðrum löndum eins og hefur oft verið gert með svona listamannaríkin rými en líka að sjá það sem að ekki sýnt annað staðar og kannski svolítið jaðarsett þannig að eins og fólk sem jafnvel að vinna list í hjáverkum eða á ekki upp á pallborðið af því að það tilheyrir minnihlutahópum Þannig að það svona okkar stefna. Við erfðum hérna smá viðburð talandi hvað mikið harmonía í íslensku listamannaregnum rýmum og íslensku listasenu. Þá erfðum við þennan gjörning og þessa útgáfu bókar frá Harbinger af því að Harbinger varð að flýta opnun viku og þá var hún Sophie og hún Anna og Bronte. Þá voru þar komnir út á gattinn af því að þær ætlaði að vera með opnun í Harbinger. Og fyrir svona hálfum mánuði að þá tók ég þennan viðburð upp á Arma Open og þess vegna erum við að fara í Open í dag að halda upp á útgáfa þessar bókar en förum vonandi í framhaldi á opnunna í Harbinger sem að varð til þess að þessi atburður fluttist í Open. Mér langar líka að minnast á að hérna sem einmitt hluta því að sýna þá sem kannski ekki áður hafa sést hér eða hafa verið jaðarsettur á einhvern hátt að hún Amanda Riffó sem er hér stjórnar fulltrúi í Nýlisasafninu hún opnar hjá okkur í Open eftir viku þannig að þótti þið fáið kampa við núna þá þurfum það að koma aftur eftir viku í Open Open í Grandagarði 27 og við getum bara 12 þangað saman Okay.